Hello and welcome to September 2023 magazine of News Talk. I am Joan Toms and it is my pleasure to introduce this month's magazine to you. This month we are delving into our contributors' school day experiences, so very interesting stories. I hope you enjoy them. I remember mine with both joy and sadness, but didn't we all? Our first story comes from Richard Fawcett, who tells us about school days up north with his wonderful sounding town names.
School days, we're told, are the best days of our lives. Well, what a jolly thought to take home from your school leaving do, downhill all the way now. My earliest school memories are of Lubley Hill in Gateshead in the early 50s. The camp school, fairly recently a wartime army camp, was at the top of a steep hill with a busy road. I remember making Christmas decorations, some of which we could take home even if we had nothing to carry them in. A trail of coloured paper covered with muddy tyre tracks followed me prettily home, which of course was already downhill and I still had years of school to go. Lubley Hill Primary School was not quite so far up that hill and I have a date. In 1955, Newcastle won the cup. I was at school with Ron Batty's daughter, whom I don't remember, but Ron played for Newcastle. My Aunt Jo and Uncle Ed were mad keen Newcastle fans, but they'd moved to Spain, so this was no big deal at home. However, my mother had taught me to read before primary, which was centre stage at home, but less so at school, where some teachers thought it was showing off. Then we moved house to Whitley Bay, on the coast, east of Gateshead and Newcastle. Of my primary school there, I recall the gross injustice of being accused by the head teacher of knocking on a door on a corner near the school and together with another boy throwing snowballs into a lady's hallway and scarpering. We went to every corner house for miles, but wronged householder found we none, this other boy and I. We were nonetheless paraded before the full school assembly. I have heard similar head teacher tales from other sources, but let me stress that there have been head teachers I have held in the highest regard. Then I changed school again to Central Newcastle, i.e. well on the way back to Lubley Hill. I'd passed the entrance exam to the junior school of an august establishment to which I travelled by train. This beats trudging up an accident black spot hill, you're thinking, but it was still a good mile walk to the station in whatever northeast weather prevailed. The school took pupils at age 8, though most entered via the senior school exam at age 11. These latecomers missed a treat. Our junior school head teacher had done military service in what was described on an enormous wall map as the Holy Land, and therefore taught RE. As well as RE, however, the school had corporal punishment, and our RE teacher grew his own canes. The canes came to school wearing a blue bow, which was untied when the cane was christened, if that is the correct term for the ceremony accompanying the first beating. In the same room hung a grotesque marionette, named, as we learned by rote, Marmaduke Adolphus Chumley Featherstone Halfsmith. In retrospect, I can't help thinking of a voodoo fetish, perhaps, and idly wondering what bizarre rituals might have been enacted in those buildings when night fell. Between Newcastle and the coast, in what is helpfully called Wall's End, is Segedunum, the official eastern end of the Roman Wall. Naturally, the wall and Roman history were taught to us, and we learned that Hadrian's Wall stretched across the country from Wall's End in the east to Carlisle in the west. Sadly, it doesn't. Even more sadly, my mother and her mother and sisters, our own family ride of the Valkyries, all grew up in Bowness on Solway, which actually is the site of the westernmost 80th fort on the wall, situated some dozen miles west of Carlisle. Silly old Romans, eh? Building a major fortification which, whether coming from north or south, you could overcome, like the supposedly impregnable Maginot Line, simply by strolling round it. I couldn't help notice, however, that the question unfailingly cropped up in history tests, and I unfailingly got the answer wrong. Had I time to tell about the senior school, I would need to speak of first-rate teaching, the Roman wall in Latin, no less, and a school life filled with music, drama, a bit of sport, a German exchange, school trips inside the UK, including to Stratford-on-Avon in the Shakespeare quarter-centenary year, and so on. So, were those the best days of my life, thus far at least? Well, there have been dark days aplenty, but many far more wonderful things besides. So, no, they weren't. And fingers crossed, who knows what the morrow will bring.
Obviously, the senior school for Richard was his forte, even Latin no less. Thank you, Richard, for the wonderful start to our school days. Next, we have John, who is going to give us our quiz. Good luck, everyone. As usual, the answers will be near the end.
Hello, hello. Do you remember that wonderful TV programme with René Artois and gang? That was a time when comedy was comedy. Well, one of the characters was a Monsieur Roger Leclerc. So to round this up and press on, I lift my glasses and say, it is I, Chambert. Question one. Which side of a ship is starboard? And number two. Which long river has blue and white tributaries? Question three. Who was the June in the TV comedy series Terry and June? And four. Mohawk, Seminole and Sioux are all names of what? Question five. Which word for a duty doctor is a Latin name for a placeholder? And number six, how many Australian states have South in their names? And they are? And question seven, what was the surname of US composers George and Ira? And number eight, getting tougher now, what was the suffragette Mrs. Pankhurst's Christian name? Number nine, who performed the world's first transplant operation, and where? And 10, where is the National Spinal Injuries Unit? And because you deserve a bonus, an easy, mainly local question for you. What type of historic structures can be found in Alnwick, well, that's Northumberland, Orford and Framlingham? I will be back later.
Thank you, John, for those. Look forward to hearing the answers. Jane Chambers comes next with her not-so-good experiences of school. You will understand why at the end of her tale.
Father, forgive me, for I have sinned. That was the start of a book that my husband was reading. It instantly took me back to Friday evenings in the chapel at school. The chapel was Italian in style, with mosaic round the pulpit and frescoes on the walls. Quite a beautiful place. There were quite a few of us Catholics there, and we had to go to confession once a week. Father Joyce dutifully heard our confessions, and each of us would have said the same thing. I have been disobedient. Well, that covers about everything, doesn't it? I can never think of anything to say, so it was the same each time. And I went out to the pew and said my Hail Mary. I never had to say an Our Father, which is longer, so I guess I wasn't too disobedient. Though on reflection, I probably was. We had rules at school. No talking on the landing, do not run up the stairs, no talking after lights. When making our beds, make sure there are hospital corners. One bath a week, washing of hair once a fortnight, underwear to be washed once a week. Write home on a Sunday, but only to immediate family, which was read before they posted it. Remember, this was during the 50s. There were plenty more rules, and one was do not leave the grounds of the school. Bearing in mind that we were in the middle of nowhere, and having been in this place for some time, my friends Susan and Betsy, we wandered outside into the nearby farmyard and up the lane behind the school wall. However, this day, as luck would have it, we saw the school car, a blue Triumph Herald, drive past the top of the lane into the school gates. Oh, whoops! We had been seen. So it was not long before we were called into the headmistress's morning room. And what do you think you have been doing outside the school? Nothing, just taking a walk. We were not believed. We obviously were meeting boys or leaving messages for them in the brickwork. How, we wondered, as it was the last thing on our minds, and as I say, we were in the middle of nowhere. Discipline needed to be meted out. No girl guides on a Saturday. Stay in and do homework. After a while, everyone got to forget about us, and we ended up outside enjoying the sunshine. In our cold dormitories, well, the windows were always 6 inches open, all of the year round, and the fireplaces were open, so plenty of fresh air. Very healthy. There were floorboards, some of which did not fit too well, so at the beginning of term, we would bring biscuits and cans of baked beans from home, hide them under the floorboards until we wanted a midnight feast. With a can opener, you know, the old-fashioned variety, with a spoke, sneak a spoon from down in the dining room, and after lights, when everything was quiet, we would open the can and dig into the beans. There were mice, naturally, but so long as the mousetrap was in operation, all was well. We were always hungry. It went with the territory. Needless to say, I was caught talking after lights, as were the rest of the dormitory. We had marched downstairs into a classroom where we had to learn a piece from Shakespeare, verbally and written. All that glisters is not gold, often have I heard that told. The head then appeared and wished to know where each of our parents lived. Most were able to give the information, but not me. Mother was always in different places, so I was unable to provide the information. Not good. For our wickedness of talking after lights, we were all to be sent home. It was the summer term, and we were due to do our O-level exams, so this was really bad news. Fortunately, some of the senior girls, who probably had done the same previously, put in a good word for us, and we were eventually let off and stayed to do our exams. Interesting times to look back on. We did have many laughs, and I suppose we did learn a thing or two. But you have heard people saying school days were the best days of their lives. Needless to say, I do not fall into that category.
I felt so sorry for Jane when I read her tales about her not-so-good school days. One hears about Catholic boarding schools, and obviously from Jane's story, all is true. Hopefully, her latter years of education was much kinder to her. Toby Jacobs is our next storyteller, and it's read by John Chambers.
California Dreaming. Growing up with an American mum, some might say it was inevitable that I should be drawn to things from the USA. Whether it was solely genetic or a mixture of nature and nurture, it's hard to say. However, there were some early signs that we weren't your average British family. When I was allowed to take treats into school, for example, most of my peers brought in traditional fairy cakes. I, on the other hand, came armed with snickerdoodles, much to the hilarity of my classmates. On pancake day, ours were drizzled with log cabin maple syrup and made small and thick. Another indication that all was not as it should be was during trips to that altar of Americanism, McDonald's. I was the only person in my group who ever ordered root beer. This was before it was ceremoniously removed from the British menu. So, during the long hot summer of 76, when most people were worrying about taking a bath or watering the lawn, I was only interested in acquiring the latest import from my colonial cousins. A skateboard. This is that story. In the 1970s, Santa Monica in California was home to the Zephyr Surf Shop. It was run by Jeff Ho, a maverick surfboard designer, and his partner, Skip Engblom. Between them, they created a local scene that everyone wanted to be part of. Back then, surfing was seen as rather antisocial, which only made it more appealing. Locals would guard their surf spots and deter any outsiders from visiting, particularly from those rich valleys. This was very much an urban scene. Venice Beach was no longer the family resort that it was created to be, and it was dangerous, and only local surfers are risked of visiting its shores and riding the waves. Back at the shop, kids used to hang around hoping to catch the owner's eye. The Zephyr Surf team was gaining momentum, and the young surf rats all hoped one day to become members. They would surf at every possible moment. However, when the waves were flat, they grabbed their skateboards and surfed the sidewalks instead. This didn't go unnoticed by Skip, ever the entrepreneur. He formed the Zephyr skate team, nicknamed the Zed Boys. This coincided nicely with the general increase in popularity of skateboarding, due in part to the improvement of wheel technology. Urethane plastic made for a softer, faster ride, combined with the radical new surf style of skating adopted by the Zed Boys, and it wasn't long before Skip's proteges were making the headlines. Soon, skaters such as Stacy Peralta, Jay Adams and Tony Alva were becoming household names at home and abroad. The newly published skateboard magazine regularly featured the Zed Boys on its front covers. The sun was always shining and the sky was always blue. Many of the photos were taken in empty swimming pools, which became the latest test of the riders' skills. So you can only imagine the effect these images had on a young boy in grey 1970s Britain. I wanted in. After learning my craft on a series of rather forgetful boards, my parents decided that I could finally have the skateboard of my dreams, fresh from California. Having spent weeks choosing all the individual components, courtesy of Skateboarder magazine, we set off for Model Sports in Croydon, where they had a dedicated skating counter. I can only still recall the feeling I had when the finished model was handed over. It was the feel of it, the smell of it. I'm sure I could have kissed it given half the chance. Although skating wasn't allowed in the shopping precinct, I couldn't help out putting my new acquisition down onto the shiny floor for a quick ride. It felt like riding a Rolls Royce compared to my previous Ford Fiesta. Skateboarding informed my life off and on for at least the next 25 years. I had my favourite spots, including London's most famous skating venue, the South Bank. Chance design by the architects of the Royal Festival Hall had left an open undercroft complete with ramps. The paving stones were as smooth as silk, and it fast became the destination of choice for all budding riders. We might not have had empty swimming pools, but we made it our own, and it's now a famous spot, and as famous as the home of the Zed Boys. Crystal Palace Park may have been well known for its dinosaurs, but to us it was just another great place to skate. It had numerous hills which could be used for downhill speed, or for setting up slalom courses. Every Sunday, a man called Ray would turn up in an old Cortina to sell skateboard goodies from the boot of his car. He was like the Pied Piper to all us kids. A decidedly more gnarly place was the concrete bowl at Stockwell, near Brixton. This purpose-built skate park was situated right on the edge of a notorious housing estate. A friend of mine was relieved of his watch there by a less than friendly local. However, that was my only negative experience in all the years I did it. If I had to recall one favourite memory of my time on four wheels, it would be a day in Brighton in high summer. Wet from a swim, I jumped on my board and sped along the wide promenade, drying off as I went. The air was warm, the sun was bright. If I closed my eyes, I too could have been in Santa Monica, hanging out with the Zed boys at the Zephyr Surf Shop. Transatlantic cousins indeed.
What a show-off. You can just imagine all his peers at school being so envious of him. America was the place then, and if you couldn't go there, bring it here, as Toby did. Great fun. Thank you, Toby. We have a poem next, written by Sue Robson and read by Michelle.
School Days by Sue Robson. School days are our best days. That's what you've often heard. But when I think about it, it's really quite absurd. Detention, homework, geography and break times in the rain. Boring history lessons. It's really quite insane. Hockey in the winter months when knees are raw and red. Swimming lessons in the cold. I'd rather stay in bed. Old-fashioned ugly uniforms and maths we did not like. The best thing was the tuck shop and riding home by bike. English, though, was rather good, and music wasn't bad. Playing records in the gym, that's when we all went mad. Sports days, plays and festivals and singing in the hall. Well, maybe then I've got it wrong. It wasn't bad at all.
What a lovely poem. You can see all of that so very clearly. Thank you, Michelle, for reading that superbly. Next, we have Paula Short is our next speaker and her London School Days story.
It's 8:30, Monday morning, and our village springs into life. Cars line the street, pavements hum with parents and children, some leading dogs. The situation will last for 20 minutes or so until the village returns to normal. But come 3 o'clock, the scene is repeated. You've probably realised by now we live within walking distance of a primary school. For some villagers, it's a nuisance, a brief mayhem before the normal pace of village life resumes. But not for me. It's another page of life, a source of energy that can only come from the very young. Sometimes there's bonus time when mid-morning I dog walk, which coincides with school playtime. As I walk by, there's a surge of children who hang on railings, eager to say hello to the dog. They know her name, but not mine. I can only put my reaction down to nostalgia. It takes me back to a time when I was preschool age. I lived in Walthamstow, and my school was on the street where I lived, just a hop, skip and jump away. Every day, break time was evident from the sound of children playing. The squeals, the excitement was like a magnet to me, and I was allowed to run to the railings, longing to join in. When I reached school age, I sprinted towards this magical world, and it didn't disappoint. I loved everything about it, the atmosphere, the friendships, but most of all, the learning. Don't get me wrong, I was no great scholar, but was bright enough to pass what we then knew as the scholarship. In fact, when aged 11 I entered the next temple of learning, I found I was pretty mediocre. It made no difference. The simple answer was, I loved school. Fast forward to work, marriage, and eventually children. To prepare myself for the latter, since by that day's standards we were a bit long in the tooth, I gave up my regular job. I decided to do some work which would help me get my hand in, so to speak. One job was working at Barnardo's as a volunteer with preschool-aged children. What I gleaned from that experience would prove to be invaluable. And I actually got paid for one job, being a children's storyteller in open-air venues in the East End. To my relief, I found I was enjoying myself, and being involved with the young company convinced me we were going down the right path family-wise. Once the family came along, you would have thought this would have been enough to satisfy me, especially given the demands involving children and caring for the horses we had now acquired. But after a while, I got restless. Time constraints didn't allow me to be in for the long haul, so I would take on short bursts of learning just to keep me happy. None of it was wasted. There was the counselling course, much of which involving role play. It was amazing how you got into the moment when you reenacted experiences which had touched your lives. Of course, there were bereavements, but I particularly remember a young woman who had successfully rescued her toddler from a garden pond just in the nick of time. The fear and then relief were palpable, even sitting in the safety of a classroom. The Spanish lessons took a little longer, but the group was such fun, it was no hardship. A young woman I became friendly with was responsible for me constantly getting into trouble with the teacher. Spanish Sharon, as I fondly called her, was perpetually asking me questions, which I felt duty-bound to answer. It would have been rude not to. And then I'd be reprimanded for disrupting the class. Not my fault, my expression conveyed. Some things never change. I'm ashamed to say that neglecting the language means I can barely get past hola now. The A-level psychology was interesting, not least because it had been advertised as a year-long course for mature students. Imagine my surprise when I turned up on the first day to find a room full of 16-year-olds. There hadn't been enough uptake from the oldies and the course had been extended to 2 years. Too long for me, and having decided to do it in one, I achieved the very bad grade as predicted. Not a waste of time, though, because it got me started on a career as a writer and speaker. The most bizarre, however, was when I decided to brush up on my French in order to support my husband's business. I fitted it in with school drop-offs and booked with a lady who lived nearby. Miss Scher was very elderly, in fact, quite ancient, Austrian, and spoke French with a very thick accent. Frequently she fell asleep, so I spent most of the lesson talking to myself. No change there then. Happily, I am still able to work, but determinedly keep my brain alive doing daily puzzles. After all, when I go to that great university in the sky, I don't want to get 50 lines and a detention. That wouldn't do at all.
It seems Paula had great enjoyment at school, but not just at school, but all through her years, never stopping to learn something new. Thank you, Paula. We are fortunate this magazine to have another poem written and read by Julie Thompson.
Those were the best days of our lives. What comes into your mind? Was it your first job, your wedding day, or something more sublime? Think back a little further, not quite as old as you, after you'd finished nursery, when your mum explained to you all about this new place, now you are getting big, how much you're going to enjoy it with all the other kids. Now, we may not all remember But if our mums were here, we'd ask, what happened on that first day? Did we cling on to her grasp? She'd have given lots of encouragement whilst doing her best not to cry. Come on, be a big girl now. Left with teacher, that first goodbye. Given the time I've spent at school, memories are few and far between. They say that means they were happy years, no trauma or anything mean. I played the violin in the orchestra, was the witch in The Wizard of Oz, the tallest and best at high jump, getting the coveted librarian job. Such great memories of middle school, but upper school wasn't my forte. Got in with the wrong crowd of peers, ashamed to say I was more than naughty. But those years of education went by in the blink of an eye. Those everlasting summer holidays, what you wouldn't do for them now, oh my. But the very best thing about school days weren't the lessons, without a doubt. It was walking home with your schoolmates and spending hours playing out.
Oh, what a great poem. From early school days, too scared to say boo to a goose, to getting into bother later on in her life at school. Great stuff. Thank you, Julie. Ken Watkins is our next contributor, regaling tales from his university days, then becoming a journalist.
In the week the A-level results came out, I happened to read a feature in one of our national newspapers, with the writer debunking the myth that school days are the happiest days of our lives. To her, the prospect of exams from 11 plus through to degree filled her with terror, and she had no affection for the education system, which was still, some years later, giving her nightmares. Perhaps that's a little extreme, and talking to friends who'd been through the process, I found a variety of opinions, ranging from the very positive, usually from those who went into teaching, to others who said they couldn't wait to escape the clutches of their secondary school. I probably sit somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. Plenty of good memories, and particularly at university, where I made lifelong friends. And, most important of all, there I met the girl who became my wife. For the record, Judy still is, so my last dabble with education certainly provided a lot of happy and enduringly positive memories. I was lucky. At the time I went to university, the first from my family, everything was funded by the local education authority. Plus, of course, some financial help from my parents and money I earned from summer jobs meant university life wasn't totally Spartan. Had student loans and massive debt been the order of the day in the 1960s, then going to university would not have entered my thinking. I have fond memories of infant and junior school in Coventry. The school was at the end of the road. I was in the company of cousins and neighbouring children. And the real pressure probably only came when we were working towards the 11 plus. I passed, but sadly some of my friends didn't, so then we went our different ways during school terms. Grammar school provided two massive positives. Courtesy of two superb teachers, it kindled and cultivated my interest in history, and it introduced me to rugby union, a sport I thoroughly enjoyed playing and later reported on throughout my career as a journalist. And, after 20 years of covering Sudbury Rugby Club, including during retirement, I moved to Wales, where, having swapped the Blues for the Bombers, I'm now detailing the exploits of Barry Rugby Club. Our history teacher in the lower school was Bill Hayes, affectionately known as Gabby. What else? He marched us enthusiastically through the history of England up to the 1940s. He so obviously enjoyed his subject, and that affection certainly inspired me to love the subject even more deeply. It was a voyage of discovery. The lessons were lively and fun, as he also recounted incidents from his search for knowledge. History was one of my three A-level subjects, and we were lucky enough to have a new teacher in his first post, Roger Mann. Back at the school, he'd been as a pupil. History brought to life, and not just a series of dates. He regaled us with the anecdotes about his time at Manchester University, some of which related to what he was teaching, as he charted our course through the Stuart period and what was then termed modern European history, 1640 to 1789. Never fusty, His enthusiasm always made the characters alive in our mind's eye. The only bad memory from the school came in my first term, when I was absent ill for 6 weeks. The French teacher, Gus Garrett, a good man, gave me lessons after school to help me catch up. The Latin master left me wallowing helplessly. I never caught up, and even when we had to take Latin as an O-level subject in the sixth form, it remained a mystery. At university in Bangor, North Wales, again I was lucky enough to have someone taking up their first appointment, Cyril Parry, who was a lecturer in politics in my second year. Politics was a newly introduced one-year course as part of the history degree, and it attracted only half a dozen of us. But how lucky we were! The lectures, which rapidly turned into debates, to the extent that we had to fit in a couple more hours each week, were inspiring. I learned a great deal about the governance of this country and others, which almost certainly helped to develop the healthy cynicism that is considered essential for any journalist. And I'll admit, I haven't mellowed in retirement.
As you quite rightly say, Ken, a good debate that you can really get involved in is a great learning curve, and it makes you see other people's point of view. Now we have the answers to the quiz from John Chambers.
Which side is starboard? Well, the ship you're on at present, starboard is on the right, and port is on the left. However, as a landlubber who thinks boats go up and down are cold and make you sick, if you're coming the other way, this knowledge is useless, because as you look at the other ship, starboard is on the left. My starboard's on the left, theirs must be on the left. Stand by for emergency diversion. Whoops! Sorry about that. It'll repaint. Quickly moving on to answer two. The Nile has different coloured tributaries, being the white and the blue Nile. The main river is probably brown and full of spent diesel fuel. Three, Terry and June. June Whitfield was a near ever-present for many years in TV and radio comedies. Answer four. All three, Mohawk, Sioux, etc., are names of North American indigenous tribes. Answer five. A duty or temporary doctor is known as a locum. Six, Australia, not a good word because of the Ashes, even though the Women's Football World Cup was held in Australia and New Zealand. The answer, if I can get there, are two states with South in the title, South Australia and New South Wales. Seven, George and Ira Gershwin, famous for writing Rhapsody in Blue, Summertime, A Foggy Day in London Town and many more, in the early 20th century. So Gershwin is what I was after. Emmeline Pankhurst, who founded the women's suffragette movement. And number nine, it was in 1967 that Christian Barnard carried out the world's first heart transplant in South Africa. Stoke Mandeville, number 10, is the centre for spinal injuries and situated in a village adjacent to Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire. And the bonus, Orford, etc., all have castles, or ruins as Jane would say, except Alnwick, where the Percy family, Duke and Duchess of Northumberland, still live during the summer months, and in winter retire to Syne House near Brentford in the parish of Hounslow. Only one funny one this time. I may have told you this before, but seen outside a church and next to a bank building, Jesus saves. That was the last answer for this edition, and this is my last recording of the quiz. Next time there will be a new voice. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, John, for those answers. I think they were really good questions and we can pat ourselves on the back. Our last item is about Sudbury Heritage Event from the 8th to the 17th of September. Rachel Price, Sudbury Town Centre Manager, was supposed to be with us this evening, but unfortunately can't make it. I would like to tell you a little bit about what's going to happen. Heritage Open Days Festival 2023 runs from the 8th to the 17th of September nationwide, with most activities in Sudbury concentrated around the final weekend of the 16th and the 17th of September, where we'll be celebrating with Made in Sudbury with a host of free activities, guided tours and events. Sudbury also boasts a wealth of literary talent that we'll be showcasing at our Meet the Author event on Saturday the 16th. We'll be shining a spotlight on the creative talents of local residents, students and businesses with our town-wide Dalmatian Creation Trail. Don't miss our Green Sunday Eco Market with a creative twist on Sunday the 17th, and you can even try your hand at creating your very own medieval monster with local artist Jack Williams. Our popular free themed guided tour programme also returns for Heritage Open Days 2023 with a chance to step into Sudbury Story with our expert Blue Badge guides. You can find out more about the event either by calling into the Town Hall in Sudbury to get a leaflet or going online to Sudbury Heritage Event 2023. Unfortunately, it's time to say goodbye until I am with you as your presenter again. I hope you have enjoyed our time down memory lane, and you can also laugh when you think back at the times you had at school. Until the next time, from me, Joan Toms, goodbye.